You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Pressure on, and Mitchell is picked off. That pass intercepted by Kariel Brooks. Zoli going to air this up. Got by Jones. Got him. Jones in behind coverage. Down the sidelines and dropped at the 13-yard line. And a first down in the red zone. The fake to Whitlock the other way. He'll walk in. Jeremiah Mazzoli, touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike, Saturday night, so close. It felt like the McMahon curse was going to end, and here we are talking about the Ticats losing again in Calgary. This time the final was 28-14, but I don't think the score was indicative about how close this game actually was, right? Like, they were there. Last 3 minutes of the game, the Ticats are driving to take the lead down just six. And then the story of the game, the thing that came out of the game that everyone wants to talk about is the first thing we're going to touch on. But we're doing this in a little different fashion this year. We're doing our game reviews a little bit differently than we used to. So for everyone out there that's listening, here's what Mike and I have decided to do to kind of make it maybe a little crisper, maybe a little shorter. We're going to give out some of the things we liked and some of the things we didn't like. And we're going to limit ourselves to two topics each. So we're going to give two likes, two dislikes for each of us. That way we can keep this kind of going at a crisper pace. So I hate to start off negative. I wish we could start off positive. But like I said, there was one big thing that came out of this game, Mike, and it's your probably number one thing you disliked about the game. It's the interception that Jeremiah Mazzoli threw with, 2 minutes left? I don't want to kill him too much, buddy. I hope we don't rip this guy too badly, because this is not a throw.
No,
this is a throw a lot of quarterbacks make, right? Like a bad throw. Every quarterback has made a bad throw. But Mike, I cede the floor to you. This was your number one kind of pet peeve from this game. So let's hear about it.
Well, it was just a bad decision by Jeremiah Mazzoli. I thought he played great the whole game. I mean, you look at the numbers, almost 70% passing the ball, 25 of 36, 344 yards. No touchdown passes, which is concerning, but he ran one in, but no passes. But that one interception, we were driving down the field, and it was not a good decision by him. He shouldn't have let that ball go. He could have thrown it out of bounds, or he could have just tried to run the ball. We had tons of time left. There was no reason to rush that decision, and unfortunately, he did. So overall, I thought he had a really good game, but just that one bad decision at the end.
He was the best quarterback in this game, and I don't hesitate to say that at all. He outplayed Bo Levi Mitchell pretty much the entire game. Yeah, I'm going to agree that Mitchell, and I'm sure we're going to hear this, Mitchell did miss some throws early in the game that could have kind of put this one away early. There were a couple of drives in the first half where, especially in the first quarter, where he missed some wide open receivers that probably in week 10 will be touchdown passes. Maybe when he gets a little bit more in sync, he kind of relied on some of the older guard. Marcus Michel had a pretty good game. Kamar Jordan seemed to be his favorite target, right? So it's guys that he's familiar with. He worked Eric Rogers back into the offense a little bit more, but all in all, Mazzoli, I think even with the interception, it's a crippling one. And one that I was like, when he threw it, I went to the viewing party. The Ticats held a viewing party at Tim Hortons Field. So I watched the game with some fans. We're sitting there in the stands, watching on the big screen, and he throws the pick, and it's just like, oh, come on, man. It ruined what was otherwise a fairly good performance. You brought up the numbers, so I don't have to reiterate them. But yeah, it's one of those things that it's not going to silence the critics, right? Like, despite the fact that was just his fifth interception in his last 11 games to 20 combined touchdowns. He had the rushing touchdown this one, like you mentioned. He had 15 touchdown passes last year. He had four rushing touchdowns in the 10 games he started. So 20 touchdowns to five interceptions, that's a good rate. I'll take that ratio, 4-1. If we're scoring four times for every time he turns over the ball, I'll take that all day. But it's when it happened, right? Like Mitchell, Mitchell threw a red zone interception in this game, a great interception by Carriel Brooks, like a Willie Mays type over the shoulder catch. But it didn't come with 2 minutes left in the game, right? Like that's the thing. Yeah, all interceptions, all turnovers are bad, but to come at that point, it's just like, oh. And this kind of dovetails, Mike, into one of my dislikes from this game, and it was the offense sort of stagnating in the middle of the game. They didn't get off to a great start in the first quarter, but at halftime, the Ticats were up. I believe it was 11-8, maybe 11-9. I think it was 11-8. I'll check just to make sure. No, it was 11-9. Of course, my first instinct would be wrong. But they went into halftime with a lead, and it's like I'm talking to people around me going, okay, if I would have told you before this game the Ticats are going to go in with a lead, you'd have taken it. The thing about it is, though, is that from the time they scored that touchdown until the time they kicked their last field goal to put them down by 6, I think they punted or turned the ball over on like 8 of 9 possessions. And like I said, Bo Levi Mitchell played really poorly in this game. And when you get Mitchell under 50% completion percentage, the defense is getting him off the field with two and outs or with very short drives that maybe they pick up a first down or so. You got to take advantage of that. And I don't know what happened with this team offensively in this game, but they just kind of hit this lull. They'd pick up first downs and they'd get to midfield and then they just kind of stagnate. Yeah. And it was like this game was here for the taking. Calgary did win by 2 scores, but this game was here for the Ticats to win. And I just feel like that if they could have put something together in sort of the second, third, and a little bit into the fourth quarter, I really think the Ticats could have come away with a victory here, but they didn't. And I think that's why we're discussing a loss. The Mazzoli interception wouldn't have mattered if this team could have put points on the board in the middle two quarters.
That was not good, but it felt like they were moving the ball like every drive, though. But then they just, get to around the 50-yard line, and they couldn't get it going any further than that. So that was the frustrating thing about it is you see that we know that they have the talent to move the ball, but they just need to capitalize on those drives. And like you said with Bo, I mean, he was terrible this game, and you got to take advantage of when Calgary's not playing well. This is what they do, it seems. I tweeted this out. They hang around, and then at near the end of the game in the fourth quarter, they capitalize. I'm looking at the points, 19-3 in the fourth quarter by the Calgary Stampeders. You know, it's just a typical performance by them, and I'm not knocking them. They win games. They know how to win games, but it just seems that you have a shot with them every game, minus that game last year with the 60-1. But, in recent memory, the Ticats have been in games with the Calgary Stampeders, but just can't capitalize late in the game.
Well, remember when we were talking about this game last week, I said something stupid's going to happen where it's going to be like we're going to I actually said, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, that I thought the Ticats would do a good job of keeping Bo Levi Mitchell in check. And you look at the numbers at the end of the game, and he nearly threw for 300 yards. He did have a touchdown pass, but it's the completion percentage. 17 of 36, 47.2. I went and looked. This is only the second time in Mitchell's career where he has had a game under 50% completion percentage. And this game, in fact, was the lowest. The other one was around 48.5 to 49%. I don't remember the exact number, but this was the lowest completion percentage he has had in a game since he took over as the starter. You got to take advantage of that. And the Ticats offense just kind of sputtered. You're right. They didn't go two and out often. They had drives, I'm looking at it, of where they had three first downs and they would get and they punt because they started deep in their own territory, but they were moving the football. They just couldn't make it happen to get points on the board. And like you said, when you get Calgary on the ropes like this, they hang around. You got to put them away. And I feel like if this offense could have done a little bit more in the second and third quarters, they could have found a way to get maybe a touchdown, maybe a couple of field goals on the board. We're not talking about a Jeremiah Mazzoli interception because they're running out the clock at the end of the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that play was very unfortunate, but if we played better during the second and third quarter and fourth quarter, to be honest, I mean, we only had 3 points. But if we put points up on the board against this team when they were struggling, then yeah, we'd be 1-0 right now.
And sort of the last thing, I guess that either of us we kind of decided we'll do two, but we had one that we shared the same, Mike. So what's our last little dislike, kind of our boo about this game against Calgary?
the running game. There's not much of a running game in this one. You know, that they spread the ball around with the running backs. Mercer Thomas had 6 carries, Nikita Whitlock 2, Mazzoli ran twice, and Thomas Sean Erlington ran twice as well, which I thought he looked pretty good when he was running the ball. But yeah, I thought that the Ticats would be more aggressive in the run game, and we didn't really see that.
Something else, because I was watching the game going, man, is Ken Austin coaching his team again? Like, right. There were long spells where they did not run the football. So I looked it up when I got home because I'm like, I'm curious how many carries were in this game. It was 12 total. Okay, how many times did that happen under June Jones? Twice. Just twice last year in 10 games did the Ticats rush the ball 12 or fewer times. Once was against the Argos on Labor Day. Once, I believe, was against Ottawa where they only had 12 rushes. They had 10 against the Argos on Labor Day. So this is not indicative of what the Ticats do. And I feel like, again, maybe if there would have been – it's not like they were playing down the entire game, right? Like they were mm-hmm. up for a fair chunk of this. You mentioned they were outscored 19-3 in the final quarter. Once they got up, I know they got down again. Like they took the 7-6 lead. Then I know Calgary got it to 9-7, and then the Ticats were able to chip away and take the lead at halftime. They spent the entire third quarter where no points were scored up. It feels like these are times when you should have been running the football, maybe taking a bit of clock off. I know you're not running out the clock in the third quarter, but maybe shorten the game a little bit so Calgary doesn't have the opportunity to get ball into position to score. And with Mitchell playing poorly, I know, hey, well, if he's not playing well, but you always know he's going to make that one play that matters, right? Keep the Calgary offense off the field no matter what. And I feel like I don't think this is something we have to worry about going forward. And I do wonder, and I'd like to hear what you think on this, maybe the injury during the week to Alex Green kind of played a role in this. I know that they're happy with Nikita Whitlock. I know they like Mercer Thomas, but I feel like if Green was in this game, we might have seen more rushing. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think that June Jones trusts Green more than he would trust, say, Mercer Thomas or Nikita Whitlock to handle a large amount of carries in the game. But I think Thomas and Whitlock are good running backs, and they should have gotten the ball more. Now, John White wasn't there either. So, you know, the two top running backs weren't in this game. So going forward, I fully expect those number of carries to go up.
So let's not talk just about negatives. There was a lot of positives to take out of this game too, I think, from a Ticats perspective, despite the 14-point loss. So let's kick it off with you, Mike. What was one of your things out of this game that you're like, I really liked how that went?
I liked the performance of the offensive line overall. I believe there was a couple sacks, but Mazzoli had a lot of time. When I was paying attention to the offensive line, I thought that he had on a lot of plays, he had a lot of time in the pocket, and there wasn't a ton of pressure. But I know that you might disagree on this. What's your thoughts on this?
Slightly. I think early on, I don't think the line played particularly well. I don't think they were terrible. I just think that there were issues. We saw the block. I know this is not entirely in the offensive line, but we saw that block punt, which was like, why do these plays always have to happen against Calgary? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like there's always a brain fart like this against the Stampeders. I just feel like he was rushed a little bit more in the first half. I feel like they got a lot better as the game progressed. I think that's sort of the way I'd think of the team as a whole, with the exception of, like, the offense kind of dying out in the middle half of the game.
Right.
I feel like things got better as the game progressed. I feel like the young players played better. But I think he was facing a little more pressure early on, that it caused him to get a little bit less comfortable in the pocket. And there were times when if he would have held in there for a half second more, there would have been an open man. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't want to say that the line played poorly, because I don't think that's the case. I just don't think I feel like better things are to come, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, for sure. But for the first game of the season, you know, us losing a great offensive lineman in the off season. And, you know, I thought that they did pretty well. So, Another thing that I liked from this game was the defense overall. Now, on the first drive, I was a little worried. I don't know about this man-to-man stuff, because we know that Jerry Glanville loves his man-to-man, and it should have been a touchdown pass. The Uwamba got absolutely demolished on a route by Kamar Jordan, and it should have been a touchdown pass, but Bo hit the upright, and it didn't obviously didn't get to him. But yeah, I was sweating it out on that first drive, even the first quarter, really. They were getting torn apart, and I don't know what happened, but suddenly that defense got better and better and better, and they were getting pressure on Bo, and they were making plays in the secondary. So the defense was a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same. I think we agree completely on this. That first quarter, it was like, man, Calgary's just marching. And then they get into the red zone, and the defense stuffed them. That's a kind of a key takeaway and what I liked about defense. Six trips to the red zone, one touchdown. If you do that almost any other week, you're winning that football game. Yes, you're giving up threes, but it's better to give up threes than sevens. And, man, I there's a lot to that. I was thinking, holy smokes, they're going to get blown out in the first quarter. I thought this was going to be we were going to get the brakes beaten off us just like we did a year ago. And then things started to tighten up, and then they started to get some pressure. And there were some guys in this team, one in particular that I think we all knew would be a standout, Larry Dean. I think he had a great game. He had one series on defense where he basically willed the Ticats offense back onto the field. Had a big tackle on a run. Knocked a pass down to set up the punt. Like, the dude's a beast for a reason. Yep. But two newcomers, and I'm curious if you spotted these guys too. Jason Neal on the defensive line, who was taking over for the traded Devon Coleman, and the secondary, Frankie Williams. I feel like as the game progressed, both of those guys got better. And with Neal, the reason I want to bring him up is we talked about when Coleman got traded, all the American defensive tackles that the Ticats bring in, and how every time they come in, they seem to perform. Looks like Jason Neal is the next guy in that line.
It looks that way. I mean, he only had two defensive tackles, but he had a presence in this game. So I really liked what he had to offer, and I didn't really notice Frankie Williams that much. But you say he got better throughout the game?
Yeah, there was a couple of deep balls late in the game that I saw. It was him. Like, they don't mention him by name on the game or anything, but it was, you're paying attention to this stuff, right? And he knocked down a couple of passes, had some tight coverage. I feel like as the game progressed, he became one of Hamilton's better players in the secondary.
Yeah, he was one of the rookie cornerbacks.
Yes. That's why I wanted to kind of point it out, because it's like, you worry about rooks, right? And you're like, oh, how's he going to perform?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think once these guys got their feet wet, kind of got, you know, the first game jitters out of the way, I thought they played pretty well.
Excellent, excellent.
So let's talk about my things that I took out of this game. You kind of focused on the trenches, which I love. I'm going to focus on the star players. First guy I'm going to bring up, Jalen Saunders. This dude picked up right where he left off last year. Just a wonderful game. And the thing about him is late in the game when the Ticats needed to play, that's who Jeremiah Mazzoli looked to. 7 catches for 118 yards, but it was the end of the game clutch catches that he made. He's really – last year it was kind of like, can he repeat what he did from a year ago? Because sophomore slump, it's something that exists. Doesn't look like Jalen Saunders is going to hit a sophomore slump. Looks like he's in tune for a pretty big year. I was very impressed with what I saw to him on this game.
Yeah, it's a damn good first game of the season. I mean, you said it, 7 catches, 118 yards. That's a 16.9-yard average. So he makes these spectacular catches. He's just a fun player to watch. He's got speed for days. So, yeah, I think that – he could lead this team in receiving this year.
He led the team in receiving last year, was top 5 in the league. Would not surprise me if both of those things held true again this season. And the second guy I want to bring up, kind of a whipping boy around Hamilton, kind of a whipping boy on this podcast as well. And he is also going to be our inaugural Podsky Player of the Week. And that is one Mike Jones.
Yes, Mike Jones, we all know, had a tough year last year with the dropsies, and it just wasn't pretty for him. But first game of the season, he comes in, 5 catches, 120 yards, including the long of 76 yards, that bomb pass from Jeremiah Mazzoli. And I thought Mazzoli's long passes were on the money of this game. He hit Mike Jones in stride, and he was gone. I mean, that was a huge play. So Mike Jones is the first Podsky Player of the Week.
It was, that pass was a thing of beauty. You could you couldn't throw that any better. It, like you said, caught him in, he did not break stride to catch that pass. That was tremendous. Mike Jones leads the team in receiving after one game. And yes, look, 24-yard average. I get it. 76 yards long. It's unlikely this is to happen again. But you know what? Sometimes guys just need a confidence boost. Mike Jones started off last season playing really well, kind of got in the doghouse with drops. But in this one, I thought he played really well. And because of that, I feel like we got to give to him. He's second in the league in receiving after 1 week. I know it's probably going to only last 1 week, but hey, that's good for him.
I mean, he could turn into a legitimate deep threat with that speed he has. So hopefully, you know, I don't expect these numbers every week from Mike Jones, but hopefully he can contribute stretching the defenses a little bit.
It just makes the receiving core going forward that much more dangerous. We know what Tasker can do. We know what Banks can do. Banks, I don't think he was kind of underused in this game.
I think he got nicked up, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so too. There was one point where it looked like he was trying to stretch himself out. We know what Jalen Saunders can do. We're all excited for Terrence Tolliver to come back. You know, I can't reveal my sources here, Mike, but rumor has it Terrence Tolliver is at Tim Hortons Field, and I may have had a little birdie tell me that he's flying out to Edmonton this week. So maybe we see number 80 get back into the lineup. Who knows? But anyway, you have those four guys. Now if Mike Jones can make plays when called upon, this goes from a really great receiving core to an absolutely deadly one.
Yeah, I mean, if the guy playing that position that Mike Jones is playing, I mean, that's not a position that's thrown to a bunch. So if we can have a legitimate threat, defense is going to have to take notice and, you know, make sure that he's not running by anybody for the deep ball.
And maybe from now on, we won't be saying who anytime we bring up Mike Jones's name.
Exactly. I'm cheering for him, man. I hope he has a really good year.
Oh, me too, of course. So let's move on to the news. Let's flush this game. It was great to watch real football again, as we keep saying. But it's, you know, the wheels of the newsroom keeps turning, and boy oh boy did the Ticats get better in the past week. I thought we'd be sitting here talking about John White signing, and we will talk about that in a bit. But the breaking news on Monday, Delvin Bro is coming back to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Whoo! Justin Dunk broke the news earlier on Monday, and boy, oh boy, I should pull up the text you sent me, Mike, once it happened, because I think it's safe to say we're both very excited about this.
Oh, extremely excited. This guy was, you know, our best cornerback we've had in years, and, you know, he had a stint in the NFL. He played really well in the NFL until some injury problems happened, but I am ecstatic to have him back. You know, we had the two rookie corners, and even though you mentioned the one that played pretty well, it's nice to reduce that number to just one rookie in the secondary.
When Delvin Bro was playing in this league, I don't think it is a stretch to say he was the best corner in the CFL. This dude was locked down, the definition of it. I remember Revis Island. I think there was Watkins Island with Pat Watkins back with the Argos. I hate that, but Bro Island was a thing. You put him man up at the boundary cornerback position, and you didn't worry about it. If I know injuries over the last couple of years have been an issue with him down the NFL, but he was fairly healthy when he played for the Ticats. If he comes back, he's only 28 years of age, so it's not like he's a 32, 33-year-old trying to get, you know, one last paycheck or anything like that, or he's run out of options. He's still in the prime of his career. He comes back up here, we get 15, 16 games out of him. You stick him out on the boundary corner, and you just don't worry about it. And in the man-to-man system that Jerry Glanville wants to run,
he can jump right in, right?
The Ticats went out and got a guy that is perfectly suited for that. How many guys – I saw him lock down Daron Carter back when he was here before. I saw him take on SJ Green. Like, this dude can play ball. You want to play man-to-man, you went out and got maybe the best man-to-man corner that's been in the CFL the past 5 years. This is huge. This is great. And, yes, they are paying him a lot of money. That's something we can't discount. Apparently $200,000 in guarantees and quote-unquote hard money. Makes him the highest-paid DB in the league. But with the release of Damon Washington, which we'll talk about in a second, and the trade of Abdul Kane, there's the cap space to bring in a Delvin Bro. And if he comes back and plays at the level that he played at back in 2014 and 2013, worth every freaking penny, Mike.
Yep. And he, you know, he was a really physical cornerback. I don't know with the rule changes if that will affect his game or not. But, you know, he, like you said, he was the best corner in the league, if not the best and top three when he was playing in the CFL. And I remember Jaron Carter tweeting out that a cornerback has never been able to cover him in the CFL or a DB. And get that garbage out of here. Delvin Bro shut you down when he played against you. So he obviously forgets about him. I'm excited to see those guys play against each other once again. So huge addition for the Ticats. It makes this team a lot better on defense. And, you know, the Bro Show is back.
Bro Show is back. But let's not skip on John White, man. This was when this news hit. This got me really excited. I have been such a fan of this guy. I think if you go back in the archives of our show, you'll hear me talk about John White. And I believe at one point I said, when healthy, this dude might be the best running back in the CFL. Injuries, just like with Bro in the NFL, injuries kind of taking their toll on John White. He keeps tearing his ACL, unfortunately. But, man, did you see the pictures of him at Ticat practice last week? He looks shredded. Once he gets back into game speed, whoo, boy, can you imagine John White in this offense? Oh, man, I'm salivating just thinking about it.
It's definitely going to be a welcome addition if he can play like he's played in the past. I agree with you, man. Like, I think he was one of the best running backs in the league from a running standpoint, from a blocking standpoint. He's not huge in stature, but this guy's a bulldog. I mean, he's
Ooh,
built.
Bulldog,
well, so,
love it.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think it's a great addition. And Alex Green, I mean, we have a lot of pretty damn good running backs on this team right now. You think that one of them is going to be cut or let go?
I don't think Alex Green, you got on a cheap rookie deal. You got John White, who's, you know, he's coming off an injury, so he's probably not getting a ton in like guaranteed money, probably a lot of incentives there. I doubt you'll see both on the game day roster, but I think this is not something where you're going to need to see someone get cut. And man, just the idea of, hey, you know what? Okay, John White's a little nicked up. We'll sit him. It's kind of like remember what the BC Lions did a couple years ago? They had Anthony Allen and Jeremiah Johnson, and they kind of changed between them each week, and then kind of rode Jeremiah Johnson into they kind of just, okay, after a while, let's go with Johnson. And Johnson, to me, is one of the most underrated running backs in the CFL. We're going to get to that in a quick second too. But I think maybe the Ticats could do something like that, or it could be a case of one of these guys gets in there when they get a chance, because Alex Green got hurt in practice. He's expected to miss 2 weeks, but he's on the sixth game, so you never know. Get John White in there. Maybe he just never relinquishes the job, but you can't say anything. Like, you look at the team, and they're doing everything they can to make this team better, and they're bringing in some weapons in White and Bro.
Yeah, top-end talent that have had injury troubles, but if they are healthy and ready to go, they're going to do some great things for this team. It's getting me excited just thinking about it.
Guys come in, Mike. That means guys got to go out to make room for John White. Damar Altman was released off the practice roster. And the big one earlier today on Monday, Delvin Bro signs. Even though it's not official, it's essentially official. The Ticats sent out. Did you see the tweet the Ticats sent out?
Yeah.
With the video? I thought that was kind of cool.
That was awesome. Do you think he'll play this week?
I don't know. Was that Calgary? Was that where they filmed that? Because I couldn't really tell.
I'm not sure either.
I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he doesn't play this week and they save his return for the home opener. Maybe just to get him – it's not a short week necessarily, but there was practice today. It was the start of the week. If he's not practicing, you know, I'm going to say he's probably not going to play this week. That would be my guess. But stranger things have happened. But like I said, guys come in, guys have to leave. Damon Washington mentioned it a little bit earlier. He was released.
There's not much for him to learn, right? Like,
no.
In a man-to-man defensive.
No, guard your man.
Not us. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. Yeah, you never know. I'd love it because I'm going to be there, so I'd love to see him back on the field. That'd be really cool.
Get a nice pick six in his first game back. But Damon Washington got let go, Mike. And it's funny because we talked about the secondary in the offseason. Not just at minicamp, we were like, man, Damon Washington, Don Unamba, Abdul Kane, Richard Leonard, Courtney Steven. And Richard Leonard's the only one left standing. Courtney Steven did not start in this game.
Right, what do you think about Mike Daly?
Mike Daly,
he had a good game too.
Your boy, Mike Daly. He did have a pretty good game, but that's your boy.
Yep.
It's, you know what, they're going to play the guys that they think are best. And Courtney Steven is a very highly paid safety. I believe him and Antoine Pruneau are the two top before Bro. That's a lot of money sitting on the pine. But you know what? You want the team to play the best players, and if that's the case. But it's funny that we looked at that secondary and went, man, a lot of continuity, guys coming back. This is going to be pretty good secondary. And we're heading into week two, and only one of them is still starting in the secondary.
Right.
Crazy how transient this league can be sometimes.
Yeah, I remember I took a look at the depth chart before the first game, and I was looking at the secondary, and I'm like, maybe I'm not so high on this group. Like, who are these guys? But yeah, DeMond Washington has been a guy who has floated around the league, if I'm not mistaken, from here to there. You know, I liked him as a player, but if he has to go to bring in Bro, then he has to go.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. They both played the same position, and no offense to DeMond Washington, but Delvin Bro is a former All-Star, league All-Star in this league, yep. And I'll take that any day of the week. Okay, let's talk some CFL stuff. Not a ton of news this week, but the TSN released their top 50. And whenever they do this, I like to go on Three Down Nation, and I will post players I think were snubbed and players I think should not have been on the list. And I've released the snubs list, and most people are like, oh, it's a pretty good list. There's some people who go, I don't think he should have been on there. I don't think he was that good, blah, blah, blah. Then I release the guys who shouldn't be on the list. And that is when I just get pooped on from high atop the mountain. I'm still getting tweets to today. I released that TSN list came out on Tuesday of last week. It is Monday, 6 days later. I am still getting people calling me names for – I had someone call me – this may be my favorite one of all. Someone disagreed Rob Bagg disagreed with why I had Brandon Labatt saying, I don't think he should have been on the list. I think injuries and age have kind of cut up to him. I think he's good. I don't think he's top 50. And that's something I want to stress. It's not that I think these players are bad players. We're talking about the top 50 players in the CFL. Not everyone can be top 50. You do these things and you talk to people and they're like, oh, yeah, this guy should be on the list and that guy should be on the list and this guy should be on the list. Okay, well, who do you take off to replace them? Well, we can't take anyone off. It's not the top 56. It's not the top 64. It's the top 50. If you want to put someone on, you got to take someone off. And that's how I balanced the thing I did. But, yeah, so Rob Begg tweets out that I need to watch more film or something along those lines. And, like, whatever. You know, guys are going to take shots. He's friends with Brandon Labatt. I get it. It's fine. And then someone tweeted that Josh Smith is a blowhard. And if a-holes could fly, I would be a jet. And that is just fantastic. If you're gonna make fun of me, if you're gonna call me names, if you're gonna try to, you're gonna hate on what I say, please be creative like that, because that made me laugh. And as I'm wont to do when people make fun of me, I roll with it. I have now changed my name to the Asshole Jet on Twitter. So that is where you can find me for the time being. But anyway, now that I've gotten that off my chest, I wanted to talk on the show about, we're going to talk some snubs, we're going to talk some surprises, and Mike, you're going to cover the rankings that you disagreed with, which I think is a fun little thing. But there are three guys that I want to talk about when it comes to snubs. Jalen Saunders, kind of talked about him earlier. I gave the resume, top five in receiving, led the Ticats in receiving yards, not on the top 50. And he was overshadowed last year by Richard Leonard on his own team, overshadowed last year by James Wilder Jr. But in 2017, Davaris Daniels, who was the top rookie of that year, made the list with less than 1,000 yards receiving in 11 games. Jalen Saunders played something along the lines of 16 or 17 games last year and was fifth in the league in receiving yards. How is that guy not top 50?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. This guy is a rising star. And let me just tell you, he will be very high. Maybe not top 10, but pretty high on next year's list.
And the other two I want to talk about, because people say, oh, you're only vouching for Saunders because he's a Ticat. The next two on this list to me, they're not Ticats. Well, not to me. They just aren't Ticats. But the next two guys that I think should have been in the top 50 are not Ticats players. They're a pair of running backs. It's Terrell Sutton and it's Jeremiah Johnson. I think Jeremiah Johnson, as I said earlier, is probably the most underappreciated, underrated running back in the league. And if he's not, Terrell Sutton is. If Terrell Sutton played for any other team the last few years other than the Montreal Alouettes, you'd be talking about this guy in the top 15, top 20, yeah. Not missing the top 50 altogether. He doesn't get the opportunities that backs on better teams get. He's had the unfortunate situation of playing for a terrible Montreal team. But I would take Terrell Sutton on any team I was coaching, owning, GMing, you name it. If I'm starting a team, Terrell Sutton would be on that squad. How he is not on this list astounds me. How Jeremiah Johnson is not on this list astounds me. And I don't want to get too deep into it, but how John Bowman is not on this list astounds me. He was third in the league in sacks. Yes, he only had 9. And again, maybe it's a product of playing for the Alouettes, but the dude is a Hall of Fame player still playing at a high level. How are these guys not top 50?
When you talk about Bowman, you talk about Sutton, I think of one thing, consistency. Year in, year out, these guys rack up the numbers. They just produce. Yes, they're on a bad team. but they're both top 50 players in my opinion. Like, if you're going on consistency, I bet you Terrell Sutton has another great season this year. The team might suck, but he will put up the numbers.
So the next is kind of surprises, or this kind of, you know, goes into the list that I made of guys that I don't think should have been on the list. First is Travis Bond. I took a lot of crap last year for saying Travis Bond should have been on the list. He's the best guard in the CFL. He's worth his weight in gold. And he has since signed in Edmonton, and I know the list was created before this happened, but he was released by the Saskatchewan Roughriders when the list was published. He was not on a team. And yes, I'm sure that a lot of that had to do with money-wise, but if he is as good as people said he is, the Riders would have paid the money. He was beaten out in training camp by another player. If you lose your job to an American rookie in training camp, you're not top 50, Mike.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, the Rough Riders released everyone. Right?
Well, that's true. But you know what? I don't think any of the guys they did release, and this is no offense to Pecari Grant or Rob Begg or Chad Owens, I don't think any of them are top 50 either.
No, that's true. Not at this point in her career anyways. And it was pretty shocking to see him get released. He's getting picked up, but it's strange. Like, he was the main offensive lineman free agent last year, right?
Yeah.
And then he gets released. The same thing happened to Stanley Bryant Jr., I believe, a couple of years ago.
Derek Dennis.
You know, he was
Derek
a big
Dennis.
Oh, yes, Derek Dennis. My bad. But it happened to him as well. He was top offensive lineman, gets signed to a big contract, gets released the following year. So maybe it's just a fit thing. Maybe he didn't fit in well with that team, and he'll fit in better with Edmonton. But we'll just have to find out, wait and see with that.
So the other guy on my list, and this is not going to endear me to probably 90% of our audience, I don't think Jeremiah Mazzoli should have been top 50. And everyone knows how much I love Jeremiah Mazzoli. We spent the first 10 minutes of this show going like, yeah, he threw the bad interception, but ... Like, we here are Jeremiah Mazzoli fans. I went to the Ticats game in the Podski Wee Wee store Mazzoli Mania t-shirt, which you can find at shop.spreadshirt.ca/PodskiWeeWee if you want to pick some up. I am a Jeremiah Mazzoli guy. I don't know if after 10 games I can say he is definitively top 50. What say you?
I think he's a top 50 player. Okay. You know, there was only 10 games last year, but there was good performances in the past, like before that. You know, his completion game in Edmonton where he set the record for most completions in a row. You know, the 2015 playoffs, he played well. You take that all into consideration. I see what you're saying. He only had 10 games. And, you know, we don't know yet. Maybe that was a little bit of smoke and mirrors. But I think that it wasn't. And it was he is a top 50 player.
Maybe not.
You know, maybe he's right where he should be at 49. Maybe he shouldn't be any higher than that. But I think that he just squeaks into that top 50.
Okay, Mike, let's throw it to you now. Let's talk about players that were ranked that you don't agree with where they were ranked, either too high or too low. Who do you got there?
I got Andrew Harris at number 3. I think that's a little high. I know
that's
I've been hard
you
on
hate Andrew Harris.
No, not true. I know I've been hard on him in the past, but I did pick him to be the most outstanding Canadian this year, so I am coming around on him. But I think he should be top 10 because of the way he performed last year. But I think number 3 is a pinch too high.
Hold on. Who would you have had at number 3?
Okay.
Who's your number 3 player? Because I think it's safe to say that Riley and Mitchell, 1 and 2, you kind of agree with?
Yeah. I think you put Ricky Ray at number 3 just because, you know, sometimes Ricky Ray is a bit weird. Like, he didn't have a great game last year. Sometimes he won't have good games. But I think you could slide him in at number 3 because of the way he performed in the Grey Cup game. It wasn't the greatest game, but he made the plays when he had to get that victory. So I think you slide him in at number 3, and just because of his past. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player, right?
Yeah, no, I do with the snubs and the guys who shouldn't be on there. I was just curious as to who you would have there. I can't disagree with your answer at all, Mike.
All right, and then going on, we have James Wilder Jr., which I haven't been a huge fan of necessarily. I think number 11 is a little bit too high. He came in about halfway through the season. Yes, he put up phenomenal numbers, but when the games really counted, he kind of disappeared. Playoffs, Grey Cup, he wasn't really around. So I think number 11 is a little too high for him as well. I think Tasker should be higher. I think he's one of the best clutch receivers in the league. And I think Larry Dean should be in a top 25 player. He's arguably one of the best linebackers in the league. And I know I'm going homerish on those two calls, but I believe those.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. Tasker doesn't shock me simply because I feel like he's not glitzy. Look at the receivers that were ahead of him. It's guys like Daron Carter. It's guys like, I think, Manny Arsenal finished ahead of him. Obviously, he's a great player, but I think he doesn't attract the attention, so he kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And I definitely agree with you on James Wilder Jr., Mike. We're doing Wilder Watch 2018, essentially, you yes. and I. Not on the show, of course, but our own preference. I even tweeted out, hey, you know, I remember he tweeted at you. What, I can't average 14 yards per quarter? And he did not average 14 yards per quarter, either rushing or receiving in this game. So maybe it's a little harder than you think. Anyway, I agree with that. And I was surprised that Larry Dean wasn't higher because I feel like he is thought of very highly amongst the media, which is who votes on this. And maybe it'll take one more year of him being a dominant player for them to see that he's a top 20 player. But I can't really disagree with any of those rankings, Mike.
All right. Well, that's all I got for the top 50. I just think that some of them were ranked a little high. Some of them were ranked a little low. But, you know, it's always fun going through these top 50s every year and, you know, criticizing. It just starts discussion, right?
Well, that's exactly what these are for. These are people's opinions, and we all have opinions. And I wish we could be a little more civil, especially towards me, and not call me so many mean names on the internet.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Like,
be nice.
It's just it's sports, man. It's fun. These lists are meant to generate debate. That's what they do. So let's move on and talk about something that I'm not sure will generate a ton of debate, but was something that took me by surprise. The CFL now has a refereeing website, essentially, and a Twitter account in which they will break down footage and show you why something was or wasn't called and why it wasn't or wasn't called. And in almost real time, will send out tweets about this penalty was called or this challenge was upheld or what have you and tell you why it happens. I think during the first week, I think things are clunky as any endeavors are when they first start. Go back and listen to our first podcast. We are not as clean as we are now, right? I think mm-hmm. this is going to get better, but I think what my huge takeaway from this is, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this as well, man, this is really transparent. And I know the NBA does things where they will release the last 2-minute report, which is where what calls should have been made, what calls weren't made, what calls were made and shouldn't have been made, stuff like that. This is kind of the CFL doing that, and I think maybe it's not going to be perfect, but they're showing some accountability, and that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction. You know, I don't think there'll be, you know, if there's a blatantly wrong call, I don't think they'll be like, oh, we blew that one. But it's nice to get those explanations out there, even if you don't agree with it. So overall, I think that this is a good thing for the league because, you know, a lot of people, a lot of fans are very critical of the referees, and it's nice to get that instant feedback to see, you know, where they're coming from.
That will be the interesting thing, though, Mike. You touched on it. When it's a blown call, like we've dealt with the Ticats a number of times over the past few years, and they've come out and admitted it was a blown call, that will be interesting to see if they do, in fact, go, you know what, guys, we screwed this one up. We are sorry. We will – at least it's accountability. And I'm sure I feel for the guy or girl who runs the Twitter account because they're going to get bombarded when something goes wrong, especially if fans don't agree with them. And – look, I watched some of those videos. They actually highlighted a play that I talked about last year in a Ticats Argos game where I thought SJ Green was offside, and they said, this is why he's not offside. I'm still not entirely on board with it, but at the same time, I'm not a referee. So maybe I should just shut my stupid mouth and go, if that's what you're saying, that's fine. I hope that this leads to some consistency in refereeing. Something else that came out regarding officiating is that they're going to use crews now for the first time in a while, which I think is a good thing. Get these referees, just like a team. You don't want to be bringing in new players every week and expect them to perform as a cohesive unit. They should be doing the same with referees. I'm just glad to see the CFL. One of the things Randy Ambrosi talked about was being more open, being more transparent. I think this is a step in the right direction. I'm glad to see the CFL do this. And I think we can all get a little educated on things. And it's, you know, learn something new every day. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's a hard job to be a CFL referee. You know, the game moves at such a fast pace. They get a lot of criticism, but and sometimes well deserved. But yeah, I just like that. I think this is a step in the right direction for them. And any communication you can have between the refereeing and the fans is a good thing.
All right, Mike, up next we got our Bozos, Chodes, and Slapdicks. We got a couple of nominees this week. Mike, who's your Bozo?
My bozo, unfortunately, has to go to Simone Lawrence. You know, he was on the sideline and they threw it out of bounds a little bit. He was right next to the field of play. And maybe, I know that Jalen Saunders stepped out on the play, but Simone didn't know that. He was just trying to be funny. I saw him laughing after the play happened. I mean, that could have hurt the team. And I don't think it's that funny. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to give my bozo of the week to Simone Lawrence.
We had talked about this beforehand. I was wondering if you had known that Saunders would step out, and if that would say, you know what, I can't call him a bozo simply because it wouldn't have counted anyway. But then you made the point of he didn't know that, and you're right,
Yeah, his
he did
back
not
it
know
was
that.
like yeah, his back was to him, so there's no way if he was just going, he wasn't thinking about there was the play on the field. He was thinking about himself. I don't know.
He was
It just kind of bugged me.
he Bartmanned it. He
Yes.
stole
Yep.
the ball in the game from
Yep.
Moises Alou, and that's what Simone Lawrence did here, man. And it's a good thing that Saunders stepped out, because I think we'd be a lot harsher on this. Because yeah, you're right, it would have been a tough catch, but he could have brought that in. So he's kind of lucky Saunders stepped out, or else we'd be.
I don't think his teammates thought it was that funny. I mean, you saw the
No.
reaction. No one was laughing except for Simone. So, yeah, a dumb move. I'm a big fan of Simone, but I had to give it to him this week.
Yeah, so I'm going to throw Captain Slapdick label on one Chris Jones, Mike, for refusing to name his starting quarterback. He met with the media after practice, the first practice of the week, and after Zach Kolaros had taken the majority of the reps, which the starting quarterbacks does, which any person who watches practice knows, they said, "Have you named a starting quarterback?" And he goes, "I'm not telling you. Why should I give an advantage to the team that's playing us?"
He was very snippy about it too,
And
wasn't he?
it's so stupid and unnecessary and dickish, but what do you have to gain from this? What possibly could a team not figure out from I just don't get the point. I think that's the main thing from this. Anyone who follows the league, if you don't think that teams under possible burner accounts are following every member of the media to get every piece of information they can, you're naive. So, people in Toronto who follow the team, people in Toronto who work with the team, knew that Zach Kolaros was going, oh, he had taken the majority of reps of practice? He's going to be the starter. Because he's like, I don't want them to be able to game plan for someone. But it's like, you're not, like, it's unnecessarily secretive. In a world where we know what's going on anyway.
Yeah, it's stupid. I mean, Zach's gonna be the starting quarterback. If you're starting Brandon Bridge over Zach, you're just hurting your team. So there's no
Shots
question
fired
that.
from Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, Zach's the better quarterback. He's going to be the starter. So teams don't have to worry about Brandon Bridge coming in. I don't think, anyways. And if Jones does that, I don't think it's for the betterment of the team, because I think Zach played pretty well in his first game as a Saskatchewan Roughrider, and I think he's the better quarterback by a country mile.
Well, and you brought up a great point before we recorded about the fantasy football aspect of this.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the CFL wants more fans. Well, fantasy football is a good engine for them to get more fans. Or, you know, the NFL is extremely popular, and part of that popularity is fantasy football. So fans need to know who's going to be starting at quarterback. And if we have a coach who won't tell the media or the fans who's going to be their starter, then we have a problem, because people want to know these things.
Well, and the CFL itself, they have their own fantasy podcast. They essentially run the fantasy games that people play in conjunction with TSN. The third party ones they're all gone now, unfortunately. Those were the ones that you and I played for so many years that we loved, wish they'd come back because I think they're better than what the CFL offers, but that's neither here nor there. But the CFL is an active participant in the fantasy experience for fans of this league. For them to have a member of the squad, to have the head coach of that squad basically thumb his nose at it, it's you're hurting the product, you're hurting the fans. And I just think this is something that in this day and age, with social media, with the ability to get information immediately almost. This just seems like a philosophy from a bygone era.
Yeah, it should be implemented. There should be a rule that says you have to release your starting quarterback this amount of time before the game starts, because if they want to step up and they want to get more popularity, this is a big part of it, fantasy football. And, you know, if you get another team, that means that there's going to be more interest because there's more teams, and it's just a good thing to have in your back pocket.
Well, I know the league releases the depth charts. I think it's 24 hours before kickoff. That's when they have to be released. But then you hear coaches say, like, oh, he might be listed at number one, but that doesn't mean he's
right.
going to...
Yeah, it's like, these mind games.
It's ludicrous. And again, in this day and age, we know... Yes, so the Calgary Stampeders, Dave Dickens, said, look, I think it was Don Jackson was listed as a starter, but Terry Williams is going to get a lot of reps. But Williams runs back kicks, so we don't want to overburden him. I get that. That's fine with running backs, but with quarterbacks, like, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're not helping yourself. You think the Argos were sitting there going, well, I guess we got a game plan for Brandon Bridge too. They knew Zach was going to start.
Yeah. I mean, they're paying the guy a lot of money. I know he's probably not making what he was on the Ticats contract, but I've heard numbers in the 400,000 range. So, you know, if you're going to be paying that guy that much money, you want him on the field.
All right, Mike, last piece of thing we got to talk about this week. We got another game to review, and we've decided to change things up a little this year as well. Instead of your standard, here's what we need to do on offense, here's what we need to do on defense, that became redundant. That became boring for us to talk about, so I think it became boring for you guys to listen to. So we're going to do something a little fun this year. We're going to try something new out. Maybe it doesn't last a season. Maybe we come up with another idea, but for now, this is what we're doing. One of us is going to talk about why we think the Ticats are going to lose the game, and one of us is going to talk about why we think the Ticats are going to win the game. But before we get to that, I guess we should set up what the game actually is. And it's our Hamilton Ticats heading to Commonwealth Stadium to take on Edmonton. This is a place where the Ticats have had a wee bit of success that we'll get to in a bit as one of my reasons why I think they'll win. But yeah, so the Ticats and the Eskimos are going toe-to-toe in week two. Eskimos coming off a big 33-30 win in Winnipeg after that ridiculously long weather delay, which I went to Buffalo, as we talked about last week. I went to Buffalo, and when I was coming home, I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to see any of the game. Like, maybe I'll catch the end of the fourth quarter. Who knows? And then I come home, and it's like a minute 24 left in the second quarter. What the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And they're in a delay, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I'll get to see a little bit of the game because it was laid out here, so I knew I was going to watch all of it. And it was like, well, we're not going to be – their kickoff's going to be – or the resuming of the game's not going to happen until, like – I want to say it was either 11:40 or 12:40, and I'm just like, oh, I'm not seeing any of this. I'm going to bed. But the Eskimos got the win. They're 1-0. Ticats are 0-1. So let's do our new format, Mike. We're going to start with you, Mr. Mikey Pessimism. Why are the Ticats going to lose this game?
Well, I think they're going to lose this game because I think they're going to get burned in man coverage by these Eskimos receivers. I think Mike Riley's a better quarterback than Bo Levi Mitchell, and I think he'll take advantage of those open receivers. And, you know, I think the receiving unit is maybe a pinch better than what Calgary has. I think Darrell Walker's going to have a big game. So I think they're going to lose because they're going to get burned in man defense.
All right. So now we're going to head to my side of the ledger, which we're calling foolishly optimistic, or at least I'm calling it that. And here's why I think the Ticats are going to win this game, Mike. I kind of teased it a little bit earlier. They've won three of their last five games in Edmonton, and the two losses they suffered were by a combined 9 points. And that includes last year, when they were terrible at the start of the season in the midst of an 0-8 start. It came down to the last play of the game. Zach Collaros threw it in the end zone to Mike Jones, our Podsky Player of the Week for week one. And he Mike Jones'd it, or at least that's what we used to call it back then. And he dropped the pass. It fell incomplete, and the Ticats lose the game. Hamilton plays well in Edmonton. This is not the elephant's graveyard that McMahon Stadium is for the Ticats. So this is why I'm optimistic. They go in there. They usually play pretty well. Last time Jeremiah Mazzoli's there, you brought it up, set the record for consecutive completions. So I just think that, again, it's not – I understand where you're coming from. I think that's a really good reason why the Ticats won't win this game. But I just got this gut feeling, and based on recent history, I think the Ticats are going to go into Edmonton, and they're going to get the W.
All right. Well, my second reason why the Ticats will not win this game is I think they will move the ball effectively but won't put up touchdowns when the opportunity arises. So I think they'll rack up big numbers on offense like they did in this game, but they will not – put up a lot of touchdowns.
Okay, so this is funny because this kind of dovetails into my second, and this is actually my final reason. So if you have more, please feel free to go ahead. But I only got two reasons why I think they're going to win this game, and then I guess maybe if you have more, I guess we understand why you think they're going to lose. I think they are going to score points, and I think they're going to score points through the air because while I didn't watch the game that Edmonton played against Winnipeg, Winnipeg scored 30 points in that game, and Chris Streveler is the league's leader in touchdown passes with 3. He was able to make some hay in that secondary against the Eskimos. And yes, Winnipeg has some really good receivers, Darvin Adams, and they have Nick Dembski, and they have Weston Dressler. But they're not Luke Tasker. They're not Brandon
Banks. Bowman, too.
Oh, yeah, completely. But I don't think he had a catch in that game.
I don't think he didn't. I don't think he did either.
So he might as well not have played as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Brandon Banks, maybe Terrence Tolliver, although I'm not going to count on him. Mike Jones, baby. Jalen Saunders, Luke Tasker. I think Brandon Banks is going to have a big game this week. And I think that's why the Ticats are going to win this game.
Perfect. Yeah, I only had two.
Yes!
Two as well.
So. Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect. So we're even here, fans. I'm sure most of the people that listen to this podcast are going to take my side in this, at least this week. But that's our fun way of doing game previews from now on. So we hope you like it. Let us know what you think about that in the comment section or on Twitter. And if you have ideas for things you'd like to see us do our game previews, please feel free. We'll band it about. Maybe we'll try it out and see if it works. But yeah, this is what we're doing from now on. I think that was kind of fun. So before we go, though, I do need to let everyone who listens to us know that they should tune into the Eskimo Empire podcast this week because they were gracious enough to have me on as a guest to talk about our Hamilton Tiger Cats and have a brief conversation about the matchup with Edmonton this Friday. So I believe their show drops on Wednesdays. So feel free to hit them up on Twitter at Esk Empire Pod, I believe is their link. But I will, if you follow the PodsQB account, I will link to it. But yes, I'm going to be on there this week. Mike, you've been on there before. It's always a fun time talking to Andrew and Mike about the Ticats and the Eskimos.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been on it twice and I went to their house in the dungeon. I don't believe they call it the dungeon. I call it the dungeon. But it's always a fun time. Those guys are good guys and have a great podcast for sure.
Yeah, there are some rumors. We were bandying some ideas around back and forth of a podcast summit because everyone's going to be there in November for Grey Cup.
Yes.
So it'd be a good time to get everyone together and kind of do a round table of sorts of all the CFL podcasts out there. So that should be a fun time. But that was episode.
We can air our grievances.
Yeah. Oh, it's a festive. It'll be a Festivus yes. podcast. Even better.
Exactly.
Me and you will get in a fist fight in Andrew's
yes.
basement.
And you will win decisively.
I'm not that strong. I'm big, and people say I'm mean looking, but I'm really not that tough. I haven't been in a fight in like 20-something years. I don't like to fight.
Oh, neither have I.
I'm a lover,
neither
not a fighter.
Neither do I.
Well, yeah, then we'll just hug out our differences.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
we'll double team someone. I don't know. We'll figure
something out. Oh, that sounds dirty. I don't know, but this is a family show, Josh.
did you know people were betting money on who, like, when we meet up in November, like, who's going to punch who first? And it's like, why are we going to punch each other?
I don't think there'll be any punching involved.
No,
not at all.
Be.
No, I hope not.
Yeah, I do too. It's like, I got to stay with this guy for a week. He's punching me in the face in the first game. That's not good.
Yeah, every time it'll be a wake-up call, just punch right in the face.
I'm going to go sleep on the bench outside. Man, it's minus 25 up. Yeah, better than get punched in the face.
Yeah, it's safer out there, I'd say.
All right, guys. That was episode 112 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw and beat Edmonton.
Eat 'em raw and beat Edmonton.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.